Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It with your host, Scott, and yours truly, Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 760-337-8874.
Oh, you just kicked into gear this morning. That was lovely.
I just woke up.
But it just, you know, you went from like kind of to bam, here we are on the radio show. Good morning. Welcome,
yes.
Listeners. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Imperial Valley. Again, 337-8874 is the phone number. Catch us on
operators,
podcast.
Operators are standing by.
Yes.
Right, hey, operator.
You know who we are? We're the people who drop down in your face when you try to read the IV press. That's who we are. You ever seen that? It's like, whoa. Who are those people?
I know. Huh?
It's us. That's us. I'm the one on the left. I'm the tall one.
Yes.
Okay.
You're the only guy there.
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, give us a call. Good morning. We have a guest today. Okay. Just shrug it off. Carlos.
Carlos Gonzalez.
Hey.
Yes, program supervisor for one of the new programs. Well, it's been around, but it's still in the developing, or not developing, but...
We're a year old over.
A year old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And we made the numbers, which is very important.
Oh, good.
To survive, because we were kind of a little worried about that, but we made it.
Well, tell us, what is the program?
The program, it's through MHSA, Mental Health Services Act, and it's called the TEST program, which is Transitional Engagement Supported Services.
Transitional Engagement Supported Services.
Engagement to what?
That could mean anything, huh?
It's up to the translation.
It's part of the Behavior Health program.
Yes, the Behavioral Health System.
That's a good place to start. And it comes from Mental Health Service Act, so I guess maybe that's the next place we should go. The Mental Health Service Act was a legislative thing. It was a proposition that was on the ballot. That was put on the ballot by a group of mental health consumers.
Correct.
Who were looking for additional ways to serve people who had pretty big, pretty severe problems, who weren't maybe doing as well as they could have done, or to kind of catch people in certain kinds of programs that were like falling through the cracks, that people whose needs weren't being met because there wasn't any specific program designed to work with that type of individual.
Is the most appropriate term.
Does this work for who you guys are?
Oh, yes.
So tell us about this transitional engagement stuff.
It used to be that a lot of people that would come to our services through crisis, hospitalizations, and conservatorship were lost in the system after they got the services.
Why?
So because nobody was doing follow-up. They came to crisis, they got out of the hospital, and nobody was just doing any follow-up at all.
That's kind of a bouncy way to come into the system anyway, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And it's a chronic goal as well, because a lot of people are chronic, frequent users of the program, okay? So it helps them to know that they have a cushion where they can land and feel safe, and that avoids a lot of future crisis. And we've experienced that. So we've seen the result of our program in many of our patients. And the thing is, they feel secure, and they feel they have backup, which before, they just were released from the discharge from the program, the hospital, or conservatorship, and they were on their own. So there was no way of tracking those people. Now we do have that system, and it's always in our systems. We can just push a button, and we get all the information we need. Opposite to before, it was just a blank file. Nothing there.
So why is it so important to do that follow-up?
Because you already have a reference on the diagnosis, on the situation, if it was a 5150, if they were under conservatorship, if they completed the program, if they not, if they were reappointed. It's a lot of reasons that helps us. But mostly the doctors are the most happy ones because they just push a button and they get the information. And they don't have to go chase the case managers, chase anybody, because the information is right there. And one of the things that we do a lot is we see our chronic patients coming back, but every time they come back, it's easier for them because now they don't have the excuse that I don't have backup, I'm on my own, I don't have any kind of income. So this program really helps them to get on their feet again. We try as much as we can to do that. And we have to remember, the chronically ill don't have a, well, that's our experience. We work with people that look at no future at all. They just work one day at a time. And that
wasn't that the motto on the back of the car that I was supposed to be following? Hello?
Yeah. But it's working well. It's working well. And we have a wonderful set of people that is on this together, and they put all the effort they can. The doctors are wonderful doctors.
So walk me through, let's say one comes in, you know, into they're chronic or they end up in the system. They come into the test.
Let's say, again, the only three ways you can get into our program is crisis,
mm-hmm.
hospitalization, and you're off conservatorship or on conservatorship. Those are the only three ways. You cannot come to a program and say, I need services.
Mm-hmm. And by hospitalization, you mean psychiatric hospitalization?
Yes. Okay. Even though sometimes it becomes medical hospitalization and then the psychiatric comes in.
Okay, so they may a regular hospital may refer you a patient who's in their care who's also having severe psychiatric
mm-hmm. correct.
Distress.
Let's say that they come out of the hospital.
Let's say somebody's out of the hospital. Immediately, we're in touch with the case managers daily, on a daily basis. Either the case manager or myself, we call and we ask for a status. As soon as we know that the patient is almost ready to be discharged, then we start looking for placement, which means either placing them at home, placing them in an IMD, placing them in a lower care
IMD?
Facility. Is I'll get back to that because we use acronyms a lot. So we start looking for placement for that person, not based on the information we already have. Okay.
Most people go home, right? I mean, just guessing off the top of my head.
Not necessarily, Scott. Not necessarily, because it depends on the situation, the status of the person. Sometimes the family, and let's be realistic, sometimes the family don't want them, okay? And then it's terrible.
Or they may
that.
Not have a home, I suppose.
A lot of them do.
I mean, if I'm living paycheck to paycheck and I just had a psychiatric emergency, I suppose, and might have been hospitalized for a week or 2 weeks or something, that could be really disruptive in terms of paying rent, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
It is, because most of them are not used to doing that. Most of them are used to family taking care of them. So what happens when the family says no more?
Honestly, and if I got taken off the street for 2 weeks without a couple of days to prepare, mm-hmm. my life would be messed up. I would need to prepare before I left town for 2 weeks. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Okay. Going back to what we're saying, we look for the placement, and the first people we call is the family, because there's always a first shot. The family, we tell them, we ask them, do you want to take care of your loved one? What's the situation at home? You know, you can get paid for this, da-da-da-da-da. And most of the time, the family will not take them, the majority of the time, because they're older persons, okay? Older meaning 40 and above for them.
So you're typically talking parents at this point, then?
Yes. And then that's I want to take advantage of this time to ask the families, please, to give us a hand on that. Yeah, help us with your loved one and by letting go a little. You know, release him to us or her, because we are trying to do our work here, but the family sometimes thinks on behalf of the patient, and that's not what we want. We want to service the client or the patient, and the family, of course, is taken into account, but that doesn't mean that the client wants to do necessarily what the family wants. Does that make a little...
It does. I was kind of wondering when you started talking about placement, I was kind of like, you probably are on the phone every day with a client going, hey, Bob, you know, you'd be out in a couple of weeks here. What are you thinking about? Where mm-hmm. would be a good place for you to kind of, mm-hmm. you know, we can help you get situated?
So we do have contracted beds, what we call contracted bed with a lot of facilities. And there's a skilled nursing facility, which is called a SNF,
mm-hmm.
okay? There's a lot of places that we can use for placement, okay? Now, some clients stay at the place that they were placed before. which is something very good because they're now used to the structure, they're used to a time frame, they're used to doing their own things now. Okay, let's say like the person that I was telling you comes out of the hospital, we called a lower care facility and we asked them, "Will you take this person?" How do we do it? We send what we call a package, which is the information that was gathered from the hospital. Let's say he or she was 2 weeks at the hospital. We send that information as a package. And then they decide. The admissions coordinator of the facilities decide if they're going to take this person. Now, in case they take him, let's say 6 months along the road, the person gets well, follows treatment, follows everything, we do a reevaluation. We do 4 times a year, every 3 months, through conservatorship. I'm talking conservatorship. I should start right there. When people are in conservatorship, we check 4 times a year, which is every 3 months. If the person has some progress, if the person is following treatment, if the person is okay, then we release this person before their time because everyone is given 1 whole year in conservatorship. Okay? The test program helps on that too because we are like a cushion. Because after that, they're in conservatorship, but they come to us, right, for placement. So we need to find a place for them, and that's what we do. That's how we do it. And what I was referring to when they can stay where they lived is because they got so well, so used to adjusted to the facility that they know their feeding times. They become independent. They just remain at the same site. And they pay rent like mm-hmm. everybody else if they have services. If they don't have services, we search for Social Security applications. We fill them out, Medicare.
All of these clients that are in the test program, they're not actively seen through behavioral health.
No. That's probably the main reason that we exist, because they're not.
So you're in the in between. You're in between you're transitioning.
Yes.
From being new clients, you know, the clients or people that are not in any type of system, they come to you, and then from there you transition either. They don't go into behavioral health, or maybe they do.
Yes, ma'am. Because if we consider that they're following the treatment, then we refer them to team, mm-hmm. and then team takes care of the case management, the housing, all that. So we're good. We're it's a really good program, and our boss is always improving the program, helping us as much as we can. Because sometimes we think we know a lot of questions and answers we don't have. And we go to him, and he's really good. He's a good support for us.
We're here with Carlos Gonzalez. He's a program supervisor for the Transitional Engagement Supportive Services, right?
Yes, sir.
TESS. Another acronym. Here we go. and this is a Mental Health Service Act program. And so let's kind of backfill for a second here. So we've got people who are put on conservatorship or taken off conservatorship. We've got people coming out of hospitals, and we've got people who have had some sort of psychiatric emergency crisis
mm-hmm.
that are brought in and given some sort of immediate kind of triage treatment.
Yes.
And all of those populations had significant risk because they would get whatever they needed to for their immediate needs, whether it was hospitalization or crisis or even conservatorship, which is a little bit longer term.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of that, there wasn't anything or anybody necessarily that caught them and helped them transition back into a lower supportive level of care.
You got it.
And typically, because these are pretty important life things, people may not be ready just to kind of walk away and not have anything there to support them.
Yes.
So what was happening is people would be messing up again or having more problems again and getting in trouble again. And
so you would see these people at crisis over and over and over again.
Yes. It's very cyclic. We have cyclic patients all the time.
And you wouldn't see any kind of trajectory for recovery. You just see this kind of spinning in place.
Yes. But a lot has to do with stigmatization as well. Because I'm not ill. I just went through crisis. You know, I don't need you. Thank you. Goodbye. That's their choice. Okay? But we offer case management services. We offer placement. We offer as many services as we can.
Do you think maybe people get turned off to mental health services somehow because it didn't work for them or it just wasn't meeting their needs or that maybe they didn't feel listened to or something?
It's a myriad of mm-hmm. things that you know, people can use as an excuse. And I say excuse because the service is out.
Right, but if you're giving away $100 bills, people are going to be lining up.
I mean,
if it is of value to me, regardless of you know.
But still, let's say with the indigent population, that's one a big example right there. With the indigent population, you want to work with them. You want to bring them into a system. Of course, there's going to be opposition, and they're not going to see you very kindly because you're taking away their freedom. Yet, they have to take the medication. That's all we ask them. Just continue taking your medication. Let us supervise you or get in touch with you. But the majority of them are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So we sometimes lose people like that. But again, they're cycling. So they come back to the system and it starts all over again.
How long can they stay in that program?
They can stay as long as they need, basically. But the longest we had a client is 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
That's not much.
No. That's why we have to work fast. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to work fast. And we don't do client plans because that's assigned to the teams. But we try to follow a plan.
Okay. Well, yeah, because you've got some sort of goal in mind as you're transitioning, right?
Excuse me. Yes. But again, sometimes the population does not cooperate, and that's what we're like. Okay, we have to let this person go. But we provide the services. We offer services, and the majority of the indigents that we have prefer the streets. For some reason, it's a lifestyle. It was hard for us to understand. You know, how would you prefer to be under a bridge at 120 degrees temperature, opposite to being in a nice place? You know that. That's a lifestyle. They chose it. And we have to respect that. But our program is a myriad of faces. Because we do, my case manager and I have to, can I praise Eduardo, which is my case mm-hmm. manager? He's a big star. He's a big star. Eduardo's working on his master's degree, and he came to our services, to our program a year ago. So he just passed his probation, and he's going to become permanent. And Eduardo, again, is working his master's, and he's coming, going to San Diego right now to finish his program. And he's been excellent providing assistance in crisis, and because we just threw him to the lions, practically. And he was just fresh out of
the lions aren't a very good team anyway, so that's probably not a big deal. And it's not like you threw him to the Raiders or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so he survived. He survived very well, and he's excellent when it comes to assessments. Eduardo has that human touch, but at the same time, he has the reality check. And this is something the clients are not used to, because he makes an assessment, and he tells them as it is, okay, which a lot of people would coat a little bit. So that takes away a little bit of reality. And the client, when they see the reality, is like, oh, you didn't tell me this.
Does Eduardo, your case manager, work with families too?
Whenever we can. And whenever they allow us,
yeah.
They allow us, because most of them...
Which they, the family or the client?
I'm sorry?
The family or the client, which they allows you?
Basically, the client.
The client.
Because it's the client's choice.
Okay.
At all times. The same thing applies when we want to deal with a person that has to go somewhere other than the house. We still consult with the family, because that's the first priority. Talk to the family and whatever they decide. And that we have cases where mom and dad are not very much in agreement. So that's a hard case.
Well, and the clients are typically adults, correct?
And most of them.
Do you work with children?
The youngest we've had has been, I think, 19 years old.
That's an adult.
But no, at this point, we haven't had any young
people. Did you refer them to the TAE program?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Immediately. Same thing.
That's the transitional age shoes.
By the same token, with the elderly population, we refer them to the elderly programs as well that we have.
So people come in and they have varying needs, and as you mentioned,
definitely.
Maybe varying desires to be included. And so you've got a couple different issues. How do you assess? What kind of assessment do you do? What do you look for? What kind of stuff rings bells and red flags? And
Well, again, we check our files first. We check if the person is in the system. If we already have a file number or a BC number, immediately pops up and tells us the history, the total history of the individual. Based on that, we see if there's any new situations, new something, okay, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Eduardo is when the doctors make the assessment, Dr. Cuso, Dr. Blumberg, and based on that, Eduardo takes over based on their assessment.
So you have a psychologist assessing.
Yes, sir. Yes, we have two psychologists that are helping us, and they're excellent people.
Now,
as well.
Now you've got this transition program, which again is a year old, and as you mentioned, you have people who are working through chronic mental health problems.
Correct.
And stuff that just sticks around for a long, long time.
Yes.
And so do you ever, when you're assessing these people, do you ever kind of, you know, what did Einstein say? If you keep doing the same thing over and over and you're expecting a different result, that's like the definition of crazy. Do you ever kind of sit down with them and say, hey, look, one of the things we noticed is you're coming in every 3 months for a crisis and you've got this level of service. I'm wondering if there's something that we can do to maybe get that to start changing by doing something differently.
This may shock you a little bit, but the custom answer from them is, you know, leave me alone. The custom answer. That's when we try to go dig more into it, okay? It would tell me what we can do to make you happy. Tell me what we can do so you can continue taking your medication. And they just basically tell us, you know, I'm okay. I don't need help.
So it may be okay for them to have this. They may not be, I mean, I suppose we're labeling it, but we're saying that they're suffering.
Yes.
But they might end up again at a crisis, and then you try again.
Yes, yes. It's a never-ending story, but that's what we do. That's what we do.
But it sounds like crisis may not be their crisis. It may be our crisis. You know, it may be the community's crisis or something if the person isn't really seeing it as a problem for themselves.
Yes, yes, big time, big time.
Do you think part of that is maybe people get discouraged after a while and don't think it could be better for them because it's been so hard and they've tried before and it hasn't worked out and they just stop trying?
One of the hardest things we deal with is motivation on the individual. And you have to remember, Tess was not around a year ago, and so they were used to just be taken care of, and they would take off and do their own thing.
And then right? Come back again.
Yes. They would come back through crisis or hospitalization or conservatorship. They were placed in conservatorship. So they were back again. But there was nobody that the same process was do and do and do and do. So we came about, and then it changed a little because now we have more information on the individual. Okay? Opposite to before, who's this guy? We saw him, 6 months ago, but hey.
So there are some people who kind of do this cyclically, who don't ever stick in any system, so you really
very
don't
much.
Have a lot of data on them.
Very much. But we do have success stories. We do have success stories. We have people that have followed the program many times, and they still continue struggling, but they're there. They're following up. The teams, they don't release them or discharge them until they consider that it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. They're well. They're taking their medication. They're doing their ADLs, so activities of daily living, completely on their own. They're surviving. That's I don't like to use that word, surviving, but sometimes it is suitable. Surviving, that's all.
Now, we're talking about 3 weeks. We're talking about transitional engagement to support services. And it sounds like your primary role there is to act as a conduit into the other parts of the mental health system.
I couldn't describe it better, yes.
Is some of that like hooking them up for food, clothing, and shelter along the way?
All three of them. We that's our triage.
So you come. So you may put somebody in say a hotel, for example, while you're waiting for placement stuff to work itself.
That's one of the reasons that we exist, because we do come in and we help. Let's say we have somebody who doesn't have a place to go. We give them hotel vouchers. Well, they don't have food to eat. Mm-hmm. We give them vouchers to eat to go to crisis, get their meals. They get a few meals. And in the meantime, we're preparing them. We're talking to them. Eduardo's counseling them. We're visiting them. We're asking them to come and visit us. Talk to us. Tell us what you need, other than what we see. And again, many successes have been documented, mm-hmm. but not as many as we would like.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of Mental Health Services Act is for recovery.
Yes, yes.
For recovery.
Very good, yes.
So this is just the beginning.
Recovery. Yeah, we try. And then when the teams are very helpful, because when they start seeing that we help them, and then we transfer them to somebody else who is a real person. They're talking, not talking on the phone, not talking with the system, but on the system to a real person. that makes a difference to them.
Mm,
and
nice.
Many of them have told us, you know, thank you for talking to me or thank you for being there.
Nice.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUPO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
We're talking about transitional engagement to supportive services, which is one of the Mental Health Service Act programs that County Mental Health has come up with in the past couple of years to help meet some of the unmet needs in the mental health community. And we're here with Carlos Gonzalez. He's a program supervisor. Remember, if this is of interest to you or anybody that you know in your community, you can access us through the podcast at kxoradio.com. We got Mario, our executive producer, who grinds out all the meaningless words, which is mostly my lines, and then edits it down into a beautiful show that is much more palatable, full of information, good to go. So remember, kxoradio.com, got the podcast. I'm Scott, she's Maria, and we got Carlos.
And he is Carlos.
It still is.
What?
So what, okay, we were talking at a break. How do you decide, when people get assessed by, they get assessed by the case manager as they're coming in, they're getting out of the crisis, hospitalizations, come to you, they get assessed, you start looking for placement, or, I mean, not there, it's even before that, you start looking for placement, correct?
Yes, before they get out of the hospital.
And once it gets decided where they're going to go, you know, you might offer them, also provide them with food, clothing, get them settled in someplace. Then what do you do, you know, you have those 3 weeks. What do you do after that?
Well,
what are you going to start working on?
Okay. Immediately after discharge from the hospital, we look at the notes, the doctor notes and the physician's notes. If there's a medical situation, then we need to get it over first, and then we address the psychiatric.
What do you mean by medical condition?
Let's say you have a patient in the hospital, and then they develop pancreatitis or something. Now, it's not a mental issue. It's a physical issue. So they have to go into, like, a stop for a while, take care of the situation, and then come back to the psychiatric situation.
Mm.
But we need to wait on that time. There's a window that we need to wait until it's taken care of. Okay? So
health stuff's a priority.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Many times because, you know, side effects of medication, stuff like that. It's very common sometimes.
And typically people who are suffering or experiencing a lot of psychiatric distress, you know, it's harder to take care of yourself.
Yes.
When
stuff's
just up in the air.
Mostly it's headaches and vomits and stuff like that, but that's just because of anxiety as well. It's triggered by that. But as we do, we have a package that we need to send to the facilities, and depending on the behavior, if the patient is deemed as aggressive or, you know, non-compliant, stuff like that, we need to wait until that person stabilizes. And then the doctor can say, yes, he's ready to be discharged. After that, then we start looking for the facility where we need to send him, based on the doctor's decision, which is the most important thing we look at. And that's what you were asking me, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make the assessment and what determines where they go?
Yeah.
Okay. And we have good numbers. We've been working with numbers since we started. And I cannot give you a definite number, but let's say 25% of the population is following treatment. The rest, we're in the works. We're in the works. Or they told us, I'm sorry, I don't need services anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they discard us. Okay.
But thanks for asking, huh?
And then when you just put them admit them into behavioral health?
Yes.
Who makes that determination? How is that determined? What program? Because we have so many programs.
There's so many doors to go in now.
There's so many programs in behavioral health.
Let's say we have, again, an elderly person, right? The person is basically, most of the elderly people are in facilities or somebody's taking care of them other than the family, okay? So let's say the patient is tired of being in a place like that. So we refer them to programs like for the elderly, like the JSTS.
The SAS.
SAS. And
supportive access.
No, senior access to supportive service.
Thank you.
And there's more possibilities right there because you're working with a case manager, And you can sit down and say, okay, I need this, I need this, I need this. This can help me better because I'm with family, or I need another facility because I don't think they're treating me well. So there's a lot of choices that people can...
And that's, again, that's like a specialized, another specialized yes. program under the Mental Health Services Act.
Yes, which is helping us good.
Now, demographically, most of your crises and hospitalizations are young to middle-aged adults, though, right? I mean, that seems like that's more of a bouncy
yes.
time.
The population would be between 20 and 45,
okay.
most of the population.
Okay, so let's pick... A more complex case.
Okay.
Let's pick a 24-year-old who has some sort of severe and persistent mental health condition,
mm-hmm.
biggie, and maybe a substance abuse problem. And maybe they're, I don't know, maybe they're on AFDC because they got pregnant when they were younger and have a kid. Now where do they go?
Okay, the assessment would be done according to the latest information that we have. So if this girl, I assume...
Woman, yeah.
We need to check on the priorities first. What's more important right now? You know, your kid, your situation as where you're living. Do you have food? Do you have shelter? All those situations have to be looked at.
So you've got the immediate needs
mm-hmm.
of survival.
Excuse me. Yes.
But then beyond that, I mean, above and beyond that, I suppose... You've got this kind of complex recovery picture, and you've got a lot of doors of mental health that you could probably access this person through.
Okay, we excuse me. We connect with the programs, the other programs that we have, and then we talk to the person either in charge or any case manager. Then we say, okay, we have this situation. Would you recommend, or would this person be suitable to your program? And that's wonderful because, you know, they already have a little history on the individual. So when they make a decision and stating, yes, they're suitable for a program, send them over. So that's
Does that then go back to the client? Do you sit down and say, well, you know what? I was talking to Maria Wyatt over at the
mm-hmm.
Transitional Age Youth Program, and they work with people 18 to 25 years old.
16 to 25.
16 to 25. Anyhow, they work with 24-year-olds. I know that. And they've got some resources that seem to really fit your needs, including A, B, and C, and D, and E. Is that something you're interested in doing? Do you go back and kind of sell that back to the client?
Yes, yes, we have to. We have to, because otherwise it will be just imperative and it's not going to work. That's the first priority. We ask the client, do you think this is suitable for you?
I mean,
mm-hmm.
it occurs to me that one of the reasons we need transitional engagement is because it's not that we haven't cared.
Right.
And it's not that we haven't, you know, kind of in our heads known what's best. But when, you know, you say goodbye to somebody at crisis and you give them, here is what you need to do next,
mm-hmm.
and give them a list of things, that's not too engaging.
That's right.
And it's
that's
not
right.
real transitional either.
That's right.
And it wouldn't probably be very successful.
Aside from that, we do follow up. See, we check again.
How's that working for you?
It's working good.
For them, did they go in? How did they like it?
Again, the people that follow through are always giving us fingers up, you know, like, okay, I did well. Thank you very much. I'll move on. Then we let the person go.
You should, like, get their testimony so that you can give that to the people who may not believe you the first
exactly.
time through and say, oh, look, it worked for this person.
Like a peer supporter.
Yeah.
But see, in our guidelines, we have to let them go, you know, and just do one follow-up. That's it. But, again, recycling. They will come back sometime. Okay? Depending on the...
Hopefully they don't.
Yeah. Exactly. Like you said, Maria,
the goal
is recovery.
Recovery.
The goal is recovery.
Get them into... Hopefully they get into a program, they get into one of the teams.
But you know what? That word scares them as well.
What? The
recovery? Yes, because it...
Wellness? How about change it to wellness?
Okay, good. Wellness.
What's very recovery? What? How is it scary?
It's scary because, again, we have to put him in on a setup, okay, like on a stage, and they don't like that. It's like, okay, you tell me that I need to get up at 8 to come and see my counselor, or I need to go to a program. That's exactly what I'm telling you. That's exactly. But remember, you need to recover. You need to tell me that you're okay.
Yeah, being told you need to recover sounds pretty pejorative, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. So they tell us that recovery, you know, because I've seen it. I heard it. And I try to tell them, you know, this is the best way to go. What is holding you from doing it? Okay? The majority, again, motivation.
Or maybe just, you know, what would recovery look like to you?
I try that,
or,
Scott.
Or are you recovered already? Maybe, you know, are you cool? Are you happy with how your life is going right now?
The majority of the time, believe it or not, they tell me yes. Because that's what I choose. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like you're talking to an individual and you don't expect that answer. You expect something more, something different, right? But the person they tell is, I'm happy the way I am. Thank you. It's like, okay. You have to let go. Either if you offer them whatever you can, food, shelter, everything, they still will tell you, thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy for you. And if you need other stuff, if it turns out that you're, you know, not as happy later on.
Then we came up with the idea, because sometimes they tell us, you know, it's a usual thing, and I always, I'll keep doing it, pens. Because we order some pens for our program, okay? Mm. And the main reason
ballpoint
two hand, not cheapies, good ones, because they like bright colors.
Don't even say you've got good pens. Everybody in
I'm sorry, they're all gone. They're all gone. I'm sorry, they're all gone. So we purchased the pens, and guess what? The clients were remembering where to call, because there was no address. It was only behavioral health services and the telephone number where they could call, because they were always telling us, "I forgot the number. I lost it." Okay. With pens.
Well, yeah, cards aren't very useful,
no,
are they?
They just throw them away.
Well, they're not waterproof, et cetera, et cetera.
But the pens worked for a while until we ran out. Mm-hmm. So we're going to order new pens. See, we have to start thinking about ways of reminding our clients we're there. Okay?
Yeah.
We're there. But if you follow the team, if you follow everything, then you're in recovery. And they don't get that. They think recovery sometimes is just like I need to reach that corner, so I'm in recovery. See? So many, even the idea that they have, because we sent many of our clients, we refer them to school. They're going back to school, but they're afraid. Why? Because there's people they don't know. They're claustrophobic in the classroom. But we have success stories. We have had success stories already. And three of our clients are going to IBC not this summer, because I don't think there was a session this summer.
Yeah, there was.
There
just
is?
Just over. Uh-huh.
The following, which is the fall session, I think, if there's one.
Yes.
They're going to attend classes, computer classes, basic computer classes, but it's a start. It's a start. And we have one person that may go to nursing. Unbelievable. Unbelievable because, you know, they're afraid of blood. And this person is like, no, I want to go. I want to learn. I want to learn to inject and all that stuff, you know. And it's awesome because you see their faces and it's like they're glowing, okay, because now somebody's paying attention. The taste, Eduardo, again, going back to Eduardo, and Christina. Christina, our office assistant.
Yeah.
Christina has a beautiful personality that works well with clients. She's kind, you know, she has etiquette on the phone. She's never disrespectful, and the clients love that because that's good attention. And when they call Christina, it's like she never loses temper. That's one thing I admire, because we have clients that abuse privileges sometimes, and they call us from facilities and you know, constantly, day after day after day. Christina doesn't lose personality. She says, "I'm sorry, you called yesterday, but I cannot connect you right now. You're busy. May I take a message?" You know, and the same tone of voice, that it's awesome. I have two wonderful people that work with me, and I'm very proud of them because they're really making the test program shine.
You know, Carlos, one thing that kind of clicked on while you were talking about it was you mentioned some people who have been able to kind of reaccess some of their dreams.
Yes.
And made that a part of that big thing we might call recovery. You know, It's interesting because maybe the people who are less inclined to do that kind of stuff, maybe life has kind of taught them in a way to stop dreaming or to forget your dreams or you'll never achieve your dreams. And because of that failure, that letdown or that disappointment or life's hard lessons or whatever it is, they have a harder time accessing that and beginning to believe that they might have some, you know,
you mentioned the
really
right
really cool
word.
Stuff to do.
Believe.
Yeah.
Okay. For instance, yesterday, we went to Calexico to do a home visit to one of our ex, well, not ex, but we were doing follow-up.
Yeah.
And this person has been home for 3 weeks already. He was discharged from a facility. And he and mom said, yeah, I'll take him again, because he was very, very ill. And we went to visit him. He looks excellent. He's dressing well, but he's not going anywhere. He's just sitting home watching television. And, you know, we were looking for depression signs and stuff like that. It's not depression. It's just lack of motivation. And mom was telling us, is there anything you can help us with? And I said, I jumped immediately. And I said, yes, school. How about school? The kid, well, he's 22. He hasn't finished his high school. So now we have the opportunity through ROP or through IBC to give him that dream.
To make that come true. GED, right?
But again, we were trying hard to convince him. And his logic was, I'm not ready. And we immediately said, when are you going to be ready? When is there a time frame?
What would ready look like?
But anyway, we spoke with him, and he listened to us. And it took us about 45 minutes to convince him. Because we started talking about girls. We started talking about this. We started talking about that. Things that he would remember again. So when we mentioned you can meet a lot of girls in class, you know, because and they're going to see you're doing something for yourself, that's going to praise you. And his eyes just shined up and just, that's right, I can meet people. Yes, get out of the house, socialize. And now we have another candidate for ROP. We made a referral yesterday. We called him and we told him, somebody's going to pick you up. Somebody's going to talk to you. He says, so I don't have to go anywhere? He says, no, they can go to your house and do all the paperwork there.
You heard that, girls. Be nice to the lonely guys today, huh? Well, you know, and those are the kind of experiences and values that you know, make getting up and walking around worthwhile. I mean, it's
that's
having
a
life.
That's the beauty of our program. We can have hands-on immediately.
And he might not have felt safe. He might not have felt like it was ready yet, and some of your encouragement may have helped him to kind of get over that.
I think it did, because mom, instead of being logic, was pushing him, okay? Go to class. Go to school. Da-da-da. And his nature is, no, I won't. I'm rebelling. You're my mother. I can do it. Okay? So when we spoke with him alone, then we got the result we needed.
Hmm.
And it's something that we learned yesterday. I mean, it's awesome how it works. But perseverance pays. I'm learning that. And another thing is that we have the resources. We have a vehicle. We have everything ready to go. If we need to jump and go, we will do it. That's the beauty of tests. We're mm-hmm. we're very independent on that.
That's all the MHSA programs.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
So transitional engagement supportive services. They're for people who are exiting a mental health crisis.
Mental health crisis. Hospitalization.
Typically, mental health hospitalization. Sometimes other things, but with mental health issues, always.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And then conservatorship, which is its own little ballywhack, if you will. We've done conservatorship shows too. It's
but conservatives is another beast.
California legal land.
Big program.
Sure.
And Patricia is doing a good job, and so is Carla and Joan.
So do you have like one more pen with a phone number on it? So you could give out the phone number if anybody has any questions.
Unfortunately, with the person I was telling you about, I gave him the last pen because the phone.
Do you remember your own phone number?
Yes, it's 482-4011.
Okay, so
and
if you want more
Sweet
questions,
Christina will answer the phone and answer your questions.
Or 482-4000.
Okay, yes, that too.
All right, thanks for coming aboard today, Carlos.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for listening. Join us again next week for another fun-filled adventure.
Yes, and have a good weekend. Have a good, safe weekend.
Absolutely. Take care.
Adios.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.